Welcome to the Ramblecast. I am your host, Chris Cesarano, and I am joined by Jerry.
Hello.
And the illustrious Wesley.
Illustrious?
Illustrious. That is a word.
Okay.
A word, right?
Okay.
It's a complimentary word.
Yes.
All right. Jerry, meanwhile, is not illustrious because he's from Canada, and there is nothing that shines there but snow.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Today's show, guys, we have planned for you a discussion on pre-order culture, I guess is a way to put it. The pre-order systems in general, whether they're like completely 100% consumer unfriendly or not, and just how stuff like that, like all that shady GameStop business practices stuff, what we really think of it kind of a thing. Because honestly, I can't get too up in arms about some of that stuff, and other things I just kind of do. I mean, it's actually kind of funny because this all technically recently started as a big thing in the gaming media with Alien Isolation recently announcing that they're going to have downloadable content for single player missions that are based on the original Alien film. Polygon, Ben Kushera wrote a piece that was basically saying, don't pre-order any game, especially this one, because you're essentially giving money for a product that's not finished, that you don't know if it's going to be any good, and you're not even getting, like, it's exploitative, in a sense. And then, I know Jimquisition came out with a video today, maybe, this week. I did not get to watch that recently, however, but it was similarly against pre-orders and such. And of course, one of the things that I find peculiar is, in Ben Kushera's piece specifically, they do bring up Aliens Colonial Marines and how before that release, the game was looking really good, but what they previewed was not representative of the final product. Now, they bring that up specifically with Aliens Isolation now, in case it's, you know, not, you can't trust Sega, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, wait, no, ugh, other way around, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, that kind of a thing. But with something like Destiny, where you get into the beta for pre-orders, like, no one said a thing, and I remember I actually reacted negatively when they had a trailer for the beta, like, almost like it was the game releasing, but it's just supposed to be basically a stress and bug test kind of a thing. So I actually found that
almost as if that beta is not an actual beta.
Yeah.
Gasp.
It's almost like, hey, yeah, it's a hype train. It's like the beta is marketing. It's not actual. I mean, yeah, sure, it's practical for a stress test purpose, but at the same time, it's basically, hey, guys, you want to play
the
game
early?
It's a demo. Yeah, it's a demo. And it's a marketed demo. It's get to play the game early for pre-ordering. And no one said anything about that in the games media, but I guess everyone still has better faith in Bungie. And I guess also because the alpha just happened and everyone already got hyped about it, I guess. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it really seems like selective cherry-picking on the media's part, where it's only with Alien Isolation that they're deciding to pick on it. Granted, there are, of course, obvious reasons why. I mean, as you guys saw, like, Alien Isolation is a single-player game, so the content that they're locking away is single-player missions kind of a thing. So it feels like they're locking away more game.
And historically relevant to Aliens fans, too, I guess, because it's, you know, missions involving the original cast, and I guess, at least as I read it, they're actually reuniting the original cast, like, they'll be doing voice work for that too, I guess, so it's, like, historically important, I guess, if you're a fan of Alien.
Yeah, the only actors that are missing are John Hurt, who played Kane, the first one that, died, and then Ian Holmes, most recently known as playing Bilbo in the, well, was specifically known as playing older Bilbo in The Lord of the Rings. He's not going to be replaying the, what's the proper name of the character? I mean, it's an old movie, so I shouldn't have to worry about spoiling it, but, Ash. He won't be coming back. He won't be coming back to play Ash again. So you're basically missing two actors, therefore two characters. But otherwise, yeah, they got just about every other actor back.
In gated off content.
In gated off content, yes. Yeah. And of course, there is the question that is, you know, why isn't this just part of the game? It sounds like it is. Once you buy the game brand new, then you have it. You have the content, and a lot of people are really angry about that.
Well, you get it. I'm not sure about that. Like, it's gonna come as content. Like, the content will become available after the fact, but I don't think it's like an online pass thing where you get the content if you just buy it new. I think you actually have to pre-order it to get that content, and you'll have the option to get it later on if you buy it after launch, I think is how it's going
to
be.
I might not be up to date, because the way I read it was it would be available to people that did not pre-order it later.
That's right.
If you pre-order it, then you get it immediately.
Yeah, if you pre-order, I think if you buy it new, you won't get it if you don't pre-order. That's the thing, is like just buying it. Like, it used to be, you know, like what EA used to do with some games, where they were like, if you buy this new, you get this. It was their online pass thing where they're like, you'll get this extra content if you buy it new. This, you have to not only buy it new, you have to pre-buy it new as well.
Yes. And that's one of the things that I find interesting, because to me, like, a lot of people are talking about how it's exploitative, about how you should stop doing this. And I feel like the thing that's being missed is, to me, it's a desperate move of a dying model. Because, that's the thing. Like, the whole, like, Dragon Age Origins, you know, they have the people right there with trying to get you to buy DLC. And if you bought the game new, like, you can install a bunch of it. Like, you can get the character Shale and everything. Funny thing is, I bought the game new, but I didn't install any of that DLC yet, so I went blind without any of it. But that's the thing. Like, if you bought the game new, you got DLC, but you'd have to pay for it if you bought it used. And then THQ started doing this as well. A whole bunch of companies were doing it, you know. EA and THQ, I think, were the most prominent at the time. But the general idea was content was locked if you did not buy the game new. And people were freaking out back then that it was manipulative and everything. Because they might sell the content for $5. But that means if you bought it from GameStop for $45, then you're still effectively paying $50 for a complete experience. Or $60, you know. That kind of thing. Like, the general idea that for you, you're no longer saving money. Which, of course, for the publishers, I mean, that was the entire intent. But for GameStop, that was actually kind of a negative response. But that's the thing. Clearly, that didn't work, because now they're trying things like season passes. So you pay a lot of money immediately and eventually get the DLC later. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, they've been trying for the past several years new methods that I don't think any of them have really been working. And I think this is just the next step of desperation of, okay, let's see if this time we'll be able to get money out of them. And especially from the perspective of GameStop, because, as I said, like, the previous model where it was like new games only, GameStop really didn't see much of that. They don't get much money for new copies of games. They only really see, and it's a moderate amount of additional profit if you pre-order a game, and then it gets to sit in the bank and collect interest, basically.
That was one of the arguments that I've heard made a number of times about pre-ordering as well. The many reasons why they say you shouldn't do it is that it's essentially, and I don't know how this works, you know, I'm no business guy or nothing, but a lot of people were saying, yeah, even if you put $5 down on a game, that $5 is essentially giving GameStop an interest-free loan, which I wonder if they actually record it that way or not, but that's, it's an interesting idea. I mean, the thing, and I think what got people ticked off about Aliens in particular, I mean, it was an easy target. And, well, I'm not a big Ben Kuchera fan, but he likes his easy targets.
Yeah,
but And I mean, I understand where he's coming from when it comes to this particularly because of obviously what happened with Aliens Colonial Marines, which Sega did have their name on, even though it's rather funny that every trailer I've seen of Alien Isolation, they have been very careful to plaster at the front of it, this, we promise this is actually in-game footage.
Oh yeah, and the worst is interviews with oh, what's the name of the developer? The Total War guys.
Damn. Creative Assembly.
Creative Assembly. Interviews with Creative Assembly where, you know, I mean, they didn't take any kind of pot shots. They didn't really make any snipes, but they were essentially like saying, like, in response to everyone's complaints about Colonial Marines, they're like, no, but our game is actually going to be what you want. Like, our game is actually going to be like
the horror-based. We're not going to do that, we swear.
And they even said that after that kerfluffle, Sega basically said, you know, every version of the game that they sent to publishing was like, it has to be on a disc that's running on a 360 or a PS3 or whatever, or PS4. Like, it needs to be running on a system, because that was one of the things that came out about Colonial Marines was the developers were basically just told to make it really awesome, and they weren't really developing for console specs yet. They weren't doing any optimization, and that's one of the reasons it all had to kind of be scaled back and redone last minute, was it wasn't being developed with consoles in mind. It was just being developed to look impressive. And that's why there was such a major just gap between the final product and the previewed product. And Sega, like, after that situation, Sega was basically talking to Creative Assembly and, like, we're not going to let that happen again.
Yeah. And I think the problem that we have here is both that, which is obviously something they have to be really, really careful about. But I think it's also, I think what got people really ticked off was not only that historical thing, but that in the case of this, that it was the content that they're getting off is not, you know, some skin for your character or some, you know, piece of costume or some weird additional weapon that's really probably inferior to all the other weapons like most pre-order stuff is, that it was such heavy canon related content that they were gating off. I think even in the case of Destiny, where you get beta access for pre-ordering, I can see people potentially not getting upset about that simply because it's like, well, if you're someone who's into this already, that's going to interest you, otherwise kind of whatever. But it's the fact that this is one of those cases, like, I remember when the 360 and the PS3 were first coming out and DLC was first becoming a thing, and I remember everybody was saying, and I was among them at the time, saying, well, this just means that publishers are going to start slicing off large chunks of games so they can basically charge us $60 to play 3/4 of a game and then charge us another $20 to finish it. And it never really got that bad for the most part. But
this,
I think
this feels like it.
This is some of that, that sentiment coming back, going, this is key Alien fiction that they're gating off to try to get us to, you know, pay up front for a product that will never have limited supply, because that's just not a thing that happens with games anymore.
I think that I'm actually sort of surprised at the restraint that publishers have shown in not, you know, lopping off large content of games for DLC and stuff. But, like, I think, Chris, you said that you thought this was like a industry not being successful at what they were doing and trying to find a way to make money. I think it's actually the opposite. Like, I think these pre-order things have been very successful for them, so they are slowly trying to push to see how far they can go before people really get angry. And, like, the Alien thing, like, yeah, people are... There was a couple of news articles about it, you know, don't pre-order. But at the end of the day, I think if that content is still good, people will still pre-order the game and be happy. So I don't think we've really hit that point where the pre-order bonuses are too much, where this exclusive content is, you know, too much of the game for people to get really angry about it.
Well, there's also something else that I'm curious about, is if this DLC was announced later, like if it was announced and released more like the Dishonored DLC was, like the Brigmore Witches and Knife of Dunwall, which were months later after the fact. And I feel, after playing Knife of Dunwall, that does add something to the universe. And I haven't played Brigmore Witches yet, but I want to. And then, you have the BioShock Infinite, which is like really fun. The Return to Rapture or whatever the name was. If these Alien Isolation, like if this Alien Isolation DLC was released later, like it wasn't part of a pre-order bonus or anything, or what if those like that DLC for Dishonored and BioShock Infinite, if that was a pre-order bonus, like by the way, if you pre-order, you will get at least one of these episodes for free. Like, would the response have been what it is?
I think the Dishonored DLC would have made them more money if it was a pre-order DLC. Like, I wonder if part of this trend towards more and more pre-order stuff is due to unsatisfactory sales of later on DLC. Like, I look at, like, the Battlefield series, like Battlefield 3 and 4, where what they've really pushed as their business model is they sell you the $60 game, and then you can buy like a $50 add-on for all the DLC for the next year. And in my mind, when I look at that, I see a company that was having problems selling DLC 4, 5, and 6. And so they wanted to get those people up front with, oh, you'll save $5 on each DLC if you buy it this way, when in reality, you know, 50% of those people wouldn't have bought the DLC a year from now anyway. Yeah. I think I remember seeing something about the Grand Theft Auto 4 DLC that was like exclusive to Xbox 360 for a little while, and this was a long time ago, and I heard amazing things about the DLC, but then it didn't sell very well. Like, they wouldn't if Microsoft wouldn't have bankrolled the DLC, basically they never would have made it because they didn't get enough sales. So I feel like this is like the inevitable push of trying to get that stuff earlier to get people to think they want to play things later when they would never have sought that out and bought it later.
And I think it's both that and also trying to get people, if you're invested in DLC for a game like Battlefield, you may not necessarily play it all, but it also, I bet it also keeps a lot of people from trading their game in because they have that psychological thing in their head going, well, I pre-bought all this DLC and it's not all out yet, so I should probably hang on to this thing.
Well, that's also, I mean, that's why I actually think it's all funny, because a lot of the DLC, like what they do is they do want to hold off and make sure people don't trade the game in because they still want to sell new copies. Because naturally they don't get money when someone buys a used copy. And if someone trades it in, then that's, you know, money lost. So they want to make sure people retain it, you know, spend what money they can on DLC. But also if anyone else that decides to come in later, if they're going to get it cheaper, they'd rather them buy a new copy for $30 rather than a used copy for $30, because at least they see some of that money back. But the problem with that idea is, and you can see it with this whole pre-order culture thing, they're also pushing the whole, what's the next big release? We want you to buy the next big release. Buy it, buy it, buy it. Like, hype, hype, hype. Mm-hmm. Yep. And which is exactly what they're doing with Destiny. Like, Destiny's coming out before Advanced Warfighter, so right now it's like hype, 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 beta, 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 and then after Destiny's out, is it all just going to be Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty, like, or maybe they already see the writing on the wall, even though they just, Neversoft has been absorbed into Infinity Ward, and there's just that many hands in the pot of Call of Duty. Like, is Activision even planning to cut the cord on Call of Duty eventually? And they're just trying to hype the next big thing in hopes that they won't start to bleed money on yet another franchise.
Yeah, I bet part of it is, it's like, Matt, they've done studies and they realize that, you know, this pre-order DLC, whatever it is, you know, it causes 10% more pre-orders. And they've just thrown in the towel, you know what, people are going to trade this in, 50% of users are going to trade this in the first month. So our entire goal is to try to get those 10% to pre-order instead of waiting a month.
Oh, yeah.
And so they try to keep putting better and better things in there. You know, you got the maps, you got the single player stuff, you got the characters, you got, you know, whatever they're putting in there. And, like, that's part of, they're just trying to entice that small percentage of gamers who they can shift to that pre-order position or that day one purchase position.
Oh, yeah, dude, I guarantee you, you're going to see an email coming out that's like, hey, trade in this game in order to get Alien Isolation. And then the next week after Alien Isolation released, hey, if you trade an Alien Isolation towards a pre-order or purchase of The Evil Within, you get an extra 20% on your trade-in credit. Like, you're going to see that. That's GameStop's strategy. They want you to buy the game and then immediately trade it in so they can start getting money. I mean, I still remember when I bought Gears of War 3, and it was a day one purchase, you know, and I pre-ordered the game too. They give me the bag, and inside is a little flyer that's like, hey, within, you know, 10 days, if you trade this game in, then you get 30 bucks trading credit. And I'm just looking at that like, what if I was... Like, I don't know. I mean, I imagine a lot of times, like, if you work on the game, you get a copy of it, maybe, but I hear that's not always the case. So imagine if you worked on the game, or, you know, you're just someone at Epic, or you're there with a friend or something, someone's buying the game, and you look in there, and there it is. It's like, by the way, all that hard work you did, get rid of it in a week, you know? Just never play it again, never touch it again, like, just hit it and quit it. Like, it's like... Yeah. Like, it's... It's almost disgusting in some ways when you think of it that way.
I actually have a question for you guys. So what we've been talking about so far is like content that is specific to pre-orders. But I have, so the last time I really heard a lot about pre-orders is when Watch Dogs was coming out. When they had that giant, like they have a giant table of pre-order bonuses that popped up on the wiki and I think got taken down or whatever. But, how do you guys feel about like retailer specific deals? Like, retailer specific pre-order bonuses, like, you know, you
dude,
get X
that
from GameStop.
Cap is iconic.
Yes, like that's what I find absolutely ridiculous. It's like, hey, if you buy it from Amazon, you get this, and GameStop, you get this, and Target, you get this, and this whole list of things that you only get at these specific retailers. And sometimes it's like, it's a little infuriating. It's like, come on, why would you do that? I'm pre-ordering your game. Just give me the hat. I want the hat, man. I gotta have the hat.
That is where the retailers themselves are desperately trying to get a, like, that's, I mean, that's not something that works in the publisher's favor either way, no matter what. That is a way to play nice with the retailers, because as much as a lot of the games industry wants to move to all digital, I mean, it's a very tech-heavy industry, and naturally, a lot of people involved are going to be wanting to move to things like the cloud and digital as fast as they possibly can. But especially because that's where the profit is. I mean, just look at Steam sales and how effective they are. At the same time, consumers aren't ready to make that move yet. Therefore, they still need the retailers. And that's one of the things that I also wonder is, did Sega originally plan this DLC to be a pre-order bonus? Or is it playing nice with GameStop? I mean, I don't want to make a prediction either way. I don't want to insinuate a belief of anything, but I want to keep an open mentality that Creative Assembly was already working on this kind of thing. I mean, they probably were. I mean, there's no way they would just randomly put this together or something. Like, I just imagine they might have been putting something together, and Sega was like, okay, what can we do to make a pre-order bonus or whatever? Like, maybe GameStop was breathing down their neck. Because that's the thing, like, the different retailers all want a reason for people to go to them and buy a game brand new. And I don't actually necessarily know what I think about it necessarily, because normally when I pre-order a game, it's not to get any kind of a nice bonus. I mean, that's the thing. I already had Alien Isolation pre-ordered myself, and my first thought when I saw the news wasn't, oh, how despicable, but, oh, well, that's nifty. Because, I mean, I already pre-ordered it. Now I know I get something special. Yay! You know, go me.
And the thing is, I mean, the majority, and again, I think this is one of the reasons that this this game became a bit of a target for some outrage, is that, you know, if you look at the majority of games that have pre-orders, especially retailer-specific pre-orders, like, most of that stuff, for the most part, is generally pretty useless content. Like, occasionally you'll get like, oh, a couple of different weapons, which are, and the weapons are usually, I know there's used to be weapon specific pre-orders for Battlefield games, actually, and the weapons were always like some of the worst in the game. Like, you'd never want to use these, or there'd be you know, stupid costume things that most people wouldn't really care about. And if there were ever extra missions, they were usually pretty terrible. I mean, even on, like, speaking of Watch Dogs, like, Sony got exclusive content from Watch Dogs on PS4, and that extra content, even as a whole platform exclusive, was pretty forgettable. Like, it wasn't very good compared to the rest of the game. And I think what got people, outraged was, once again, you know, this was, and that was an important point, is that this wasn't just pre-order DLC. This was actually GameStop exclusive pre-order DLC that was, again, very canonically important to people who are fans of Alien, which, you know, probably a good number of those are the people buying this game to begin with.
I was never actually aware of that. This is game, like,
Amazon, I think it is GameStop. I believe the Jimquisition episode that you talked about, I could be wrong on that, but I believe it's actually GameStop exclusive, was part of the reason people got upset about it, is it was very important pre-order DLC that is also tied to a retailer that a lot of gamers generally don't care for.
I can definitely see that being a problem then, because you're right. I mean, usually pre-order DLC is something like, oh, these guys will have this skin, these guys will have this, like the Transformers.
It's trinket stuff, really.
Yeah, like War for Cybertron and Fall of Cybertron. Like, each of them had different kinds of skins or a downloadable character. Like, actually, yeah, for multiplayer, they had Soundwave, I believe, as a pre-order exclusive for, no, not Soundwave, Shockwave. The Decepticon for Fall of Cybertron's multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. It was not even a campaign character. It was just a character for GameStop pre-orders for multiplayer, which wasn't being heavily marketed for that game, but marketed well enough. But that's the thing. Like, it was still a minor thing. Because he basically controlled, like, just about any other character of his class, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Versus, like, as you said, now we have missions and such with specific characters.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is that, it's really, when it gets down, you know, we sort of said we were going to talk about pre-order culture. And I guess when it gets down to it, the whole concept of pre-orders really is sort of a relic from an era that's becoming a bygone era, which is buying games at retail on discs and such. But at the same time, as I understand it, part of that hilarious pre-order grid that happened with Watch Dogs was that some of the editions you could get in there were actually like pre-order bonuses for buying digital versions of the game as well. And Destiny actually has like digital collector's editions as well now. So this is something that doesn't look like it's actually going to go away even in the digital era, because I think it's shifted a little bit now, because people always say, well, this is retail's fault. And it kind of is in that space. But now when you're going to be buying stuff digitally from, you know, Xbox Live or PSN, now that pre-order interest-free loan is going to be going to Sony or Microsoft instead of GameStop, and I'm sure they would love the financial benefit that comes from that as well. So I don't necessarily think, even if we were to snap into an all-digital world tomorrow for video games, I have a feeling pre-order culture would still exist. It would just be, there would just be less retailers to choose from.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Also, it's even more profitable in the digital realm.
Yeah.
Also look at, however, like, I mean, that's one of the things, whenever there's a big new game coming out on the Gamers with Jobs forums, you'll see people talking about preloading it on Steam. So either at midnight or the very next day or whatever, after work, they can just go in and they can start playing the game immediately, no having to wait to install it, no having to wait to download it, because it's already done. You just can't access it until the game's release
day. And that's coming, well, it's, to a certain degree, it's already there on PS4, but it's coming to Xbox One as well, the ability to pre-order and preload stuff. And you see, in situations like that, see, there's two cases, because I used to pre-order stuff. I used to get obsessive about pre-order bonuses at one point a number of years ago, and I kind of got over that when I used to buy a lot of collector's editions too, which, you know, like most collector's editions, I got the stuff that came with them and then I never touched it. And I eventually just realized one day, I was like, what the hell am I doing? And I'm like, why am I doing this? This is ridiculous. But I largely stopped pre-ordering as well, but there's a couple of cases where, at least for me personally, it can be worth it, where at least having the ability to preload something, especially if it's something you're pretty sure you're going to like, I can see that at least being a tangible benefit. Like the they announced that the standalone DLC story content for Infamous Second Son for PS4 is going to have a preload option for people who pre-order it. And as someone who really liked Infamous Second Son and will probably like that DLC, I might do that so I can have it waiting for me. We also have a big electronics retailer in Canada has a crazy sale around E3 every year where you can, if you pre-order three or more of any of the games that are talked about in E3, you get like $20 off each one.
Oh, dang.
And in situations, yeah, it's a crazy deal. And it's really cool because you can actually cancel anything that you decide you don't want before it comes out and you don't lose the discount on anything else.
How much does shipping from Canada to US cost? Because that sounds like awesome.
Yeah, well, I've hyped that up to people every year because I'm like, this is kind of nuts. And in situations like that, I can, you know, it's often worth it in that case because then everybody wins. You know, I'm actually saving some money, and the retailer gets their little bit of money up front that they actually want, and that's really good.
They might
really
be able
good.
To make it. They might be able to make enough interest that it actually makes up the difference anyway.
In some ways, yeah, and you know, so in a situation like that, everybody wins, and I can certainly see that being worthwhile, but. Yeah, in the case of pre-ordering a $60 game, especially one like Alien Isolation, which has some good buzz around it, but which has not necessarily the best pedigree, and which, you know, everybody is a little bit leery of, pre-ordering that, I could see definitely being a tougher proposition, especially when, and then gating content behind that. That does seem, given the history of the Aliens franchise, that does seem a little bit of a brash move on Sega's part to go, look, we really screwed you before, but not only should you trust us this time, we're going to kind of make you if you're someone who really digs Alien.
No, see, here's the thing that gets me, though, because people are just focusing on the fact that Sega's the publisher and the fact that it's an Aliens game. And yeah, lately the track record hasn't been so good. But to me, the concern should more be Creative Assembly does a good strategy game. And for anyone that played it, Viking Battle for Asgard was also a pretty good action game. But they've never done anything like this Alien game. And it is, I mean, even though people make comparisons to Amnesia, it's still, for a AAA budget title, it's definitely a risk. And
it's a team who's never made a first-person game or a horror game.
Yes, and therefore, that's where I can understand people being like, I'm not sure I want to take a risk on that.
Also, as a person who loves Total War, I can tell you most of their games are broken as hell.
Yes. Yeah, they don't have a good rep for that either. And the simple fact is that, and yeah, there's business realities, especially when it comes to licensed stuff that I know are way too inside baseball to get into here. But at the same time, you can make the argument that, at least from a trust perspective, that, well, yeah, Sega is just the publisher, but at the same time, Sega did put their name on Colonial Marines and did actually put that out rather than just say, this is garbage, we're canceling this. Yeah. And I know when it comes to licensed stuff, maybe they didn't have that freedom. Maybe because of their deal with Fox or whatever, they had to put it out. Who knows? There's all sorts of stuff we'll never hear about there. But
it could have also just been like, okay, it's too damn late to save this. Let's see what we can recoup of our costs. And granted, it's still dishonest.
Yeah, it's not good for consumers when they do that, even if it does maybe make business sense.
Yeah. But even so, like, my point again is, like, I mean, if you're saying, like, oh, I'm not sure about Alien Isolation, because, like, the reasons, like you said, Wesley, like, mm-hmm. because, you know, like, these are guys that haven't made a game like this before, and even though the Total War games are usually well-received, they're also incredibly buggy. I mean, that's typically one of the reasons I kind of ignore a lot of Rockstar games, because I feel like they're just poorly put together on the whole. So, you know, and that's why a lot of people don't buy Obsidian games brand new, because they tend to be buggy and everything. Personally, me, I'd rather encourage, I mean, granted, I mean, I just love the idea of another Alien game anyway. I'm that freaking hopeless. But when I look at it, I look at it as, like, Alien vs. Predator 3 or 2010, whatever you want to call it, I didn't have much faith in Rebellion anyway. I mean, the one that I loved was the one by Monolith. Monolith Soft? I can't even keep up. One of them's Japanese, one of them made Fear.
Monolith is North American.
There you go, Monolith. Yeah. They're the ones that made Aliens vs. Predator 2. That was the one that I thought was really good. And instead they got Rebellion, who doesn't have the best track record in regards to games, to make Aliens vs. Predator for 2010. And so I was already skeptical of that. And that one didn't turn out to be the greatest. Not bad, but it wasn't great. And then, yeah, Aliens Colonial Marines was a debacle. Was there any others? I feel like there should have been one more or something.
They're not coming to me, but there have been other ones.
the Obsidian one was canceled. I know that.
Yes, it was. Their RPG was canceled. I'm blanking on it, but yes, there were other ones going back a ways.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, except for Aliens vs. Predator 2, you're not seeing the best track record in that, just in this licensed franchise in general. So yeah, I mean, I can understand that to an extent, but at the same time, I'd rather, you know, look at each different company, and I feel like Creative Assembly has, for the most part, the best credentials for trust, and I would rather trust a good studio, and I'd rather, and here's another thing too, like everyone complains about, oh, there's no, I mean, this is an alien game that's not... This is a niche horror game. Let's just go for broke there. This isn't Amnesia, where it's an indie title that can be sold at a cheaper price. This is a full-on AAA game of that style, of a niche horror genre. Do some people really think that's not worth taking a risk on? But people are going to say, you know, wait for the review scores. And that really depends on if you trust the reviewers. And at this point, I actually don't. I've seen enough that I think a lot of reviewers bring in bias. Otherwise, it would not have taken Alien Isolation for Ben Cachera to have been discussing why you shouldn't pre-order a game based off of certain promises.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's tricky. I mean, personally, I follow enough reviewers that I trust that I can confidently say wait for the reviews. But I've heard other people in the past say, well, are reviewers entirely trustworthy? And yeah, historically there is a lot of examples you can point to say maybe not. And you know, if you're someone who plays games but doesn't breathe this stuff to the degree that we do, yeah, it might be hard for you to look at reviews and go, well, yeah, okay, I trust what these people are saying. And it's tricky, right? Because I'm old enough to remember a day when, well, they GameStop in Canada used to be called Electronics Boutique or EB Games, which I think they still are in many ways. And I remember a time when you actually were able to actually return games to them, and you were able to do so for just about any reason. Like, you could come back, I think it was only within like 2 days or something, but you could come back, no questions asked, and actually return a game, even if you like, it could be that you didn't like it. It could be that you finished it, even if you were really crazy about it, and you were able to actually do that. And at least in that situation, it takes the risk away from the consumer to a certain degree.
A little bit.
But yeah, it certainly removes some of it. But it's a tricky thing now. And I mean, I do think, especially when it comes to certain types of titles, especially PC games, and that where a lot of games have, well, and it happens on consoles too, where a lot of games have shipped practically broken in some cases. I do think that maybe people don't necessarily trust mainstream reviewers, but between them and YouTube and a lot of other places, I think there can be an argument to be said, well, even if you wait an extra day or two after release, if you're going to part with $60, it might be worth doing that to ensure that you don't get taken for a ride.
Yeah.
You know, and, but the thing is, this is where the thing clashes, right? Is that it's in a consumer's interest to wait a little bit, but, and ultimately that probably makes the most sense, but the publisher industry is never going to do that because the publisher industry, most of which is publicly traded, wants to front load, but not only front load as much revenue as they can, but be able to say to their investors, look how many of these games we've sold before it's even come out, because then they can tell their investors, here's how much revenue we're pretty likely to be able to make that quarter. It's kind of predicting the future in some ways, which is something investors really, really like. And that's part of the problem, is it's pre-ordering for that reason is inherently anti-consumer, but in the era of publicly traded companies, that's kind of what they have to do. But at the same time, and that's the thing, if a game comes out and it's really, really good, it will probably still sell as many copies as it would either way and will probably still be successful and make them a lot of money. They just don't get, the publishers just don't get to know that in advance, and that's what they'd rather do.
Yeah, I think we all know that, like, pre-ordering, it's like rolling the dice on a game, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a risk. But I still fall for it. Like, they put things in there. Like, my biggest thing is Battlefield, right? I know Battlefield's going to be broken. I know it's not going to work. I just know it. I'm just glutton for punishment. But I still pre-order for that one map pack that I'm going to get for free every time. And I go into it fully aware that it's not going to work and it's going to be unfun for like the first week, but I still do it.
But you're still going to have
the thing is, you know,
life.
I mean, at the end of the day, really, that is, I mean, we do this, you know, this is an entertainment medium. We do participate in this for our own, you know, for our own fun and our own amusement. And that it's kind of it's a risk you have to weigh, right? If you know that, and you don't really care, well, then it kind of doesn't matter because you're the consumer. You're supposed to do what's in your best interests, and that's basically what you're doing there. So yeah. There's kind of nothing wrong with that in the end.
Have you guys ever been really burned by a pre-order? Like, have you ever pre-ordered a game and been extremely disappointed in it?
You mean
a few times? Yeah, not much. I've been lucky. But I got a good one.
You mean
though.
Aside from Aliens Colonial Marines?
Yes, aside from Aliens Colonial Marines.
Oh my goodness,
that is a good one.
No, it's not. Oh my god, there are so many reasons it's technically not. I mean, like a good one to reference, but oh boy. I'm trying to remember.
I got a good one. If he needs to think for a sec, I've actually got a good one. This goes back a ways too, actually, which was, do you guys remember? You guys remember the Enter the Matrix games?
Oh no,
that came out.
No.
I was super big. I fully admit, like, that game, the first one of those games, had a very, very heavy hype train, and I like the Matrix a lot, so I was riding that hype train. I pre-ordered that for, no, it wasn't for GameCube, it was for PC, which was far and away the worst version of it, because the PC version was, it was a bad game to begin with, but the PC version was just a horrible mess.
And it was also built with a controller of mine, I believe, because it was a third-person game.
It was partially that, but like it was very buggy on PC. The graphics were very, very dated for the time. Like it was one of those old school quick and dirty ports where there were like, it was clear that they'd put no effort into it whatsoever on PC. And yeah, I bought that and I played it for about 2 hours. I got it in the morning it came out before I read any reviews. I played it for about 2 hours, went, oh my God, this is friggin' terrible. And then went and saw reviews for it. And then was I able to return that game? Yeah. Actually, I think I was. I think I was lucky. I think I was lucky. Able to return that.
Hey, Jerry. Want to feel old?
Uh-huh.
I was in high school working at GameStop when that one came out.
I wasn't too much past high school at that point. I was like working my first job at the time.
Yeah, but that's still old.
Oh, it is. Oh, I am. I accept it. It's fine. But yeah, that was probably one of my historically worst ones from pre-orders. There's been others, but I think that was the worst for me.
See, I know.
I pre-ordered Too Human.
Hey.
You know what? Hey. I pre-ordered that too, but I actually am one of the few who thought that game was all right, so I don't feel bad about that one.
I don't think it's as bad as people say, but that's not a good game. There's so many problems.
It's unique, okay?
Yeah.
Shut up.
There was stuff I liked about it, but I wouldn't call it critically good either.
Yeah, that's always one of those tough games, because it's like, it's like someone's like, man, Two Human wasn't really a good game. And it's like, hey.
You're right, good but ideas. Wait a minute.
It's like, yeah. Two Human wasn't terrible. It's
no. Like, yeah.
I'm trying to think, though, because most of the games that I've pre-ordered, I've usually walked away with some sort of satisfaction out of. And any games that I didn't like, I'm trying to think because I'm really going through in my mind, and just about most of the games that I played and was either eh, or found it forgettable and was just disappointed in some way, I usually waited or I got it from Gamefly or something. I can't think of a game off the top of my head that I pre-ordered and then I
know this wasn't me, but a lot of people I talked to were pretty disappointed in their Titanfall pre-orders. Which is interesting, like, because I know people who, like, bought Xbox Ones for Titanfall. And it's really interesting talking to them about the experience of, like, you know, putting all this money just to play this game. And obviously there'll be more games they want to play later on, but the reason they bought an Xbox One early this year was for Titanfall. And just, like, hear them being so remorseful. Like, because I know guys that, like, they spent all this money and then they traded in the game, like, a week later.
Oof.
Yeah. Titanfall was a weird one because, yeah, that was not a... I pre-ordered that on last year's crazy E3 sale for PC, so I got it cheaper. But I still like that game quite a bit. But yeah, its community kind of went off a cliff really quickly,
mm-hmm.
which was really strange. And yeah, that if I had gone out and bought, and this is when they didn't have the cheaper Xbox One yet. So if I'd have gone out and spent basically $600 for the console and the game, yeah, I probably would have been like, oh man, yeah. What have I done?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I actually figured it out? It's not for a game that was objectively bad either, but it was super disappointing for me. I pre-ordered, and I actually ended up going somewhere else to get it before Street Date, the limited edition of Halo 3.
Okay.
And wow.
I skipped the next day of classes. It's funny. I sent my email to a professor. I was like, I'm not coming in. Halo 3 came out. And he was completely fine with that. He didn't care.
Yep.
And I didn't actually miss anything major either. That was actually a good day to skip class. but I basically played through Halo 3 in one day, just about. But at the very end, I was like, wow, that sucked. Like, I just was not at all happy with how that game turned out.
I may have to hang up right now. I may have to hang up and never talk to you again.
On Halo 3?
Yeah.
Oh my god, we gotta have a whole episode about that.
You probably played it by yourself, didn't you?
Well, I played co-op later, yeah.
Okay, so I actually played the last half of the game in four-player co-op all the way through. And let me tell you, that in part with the Warthogs is probably the best 10 minutes of video games I've ever had, with, you know, four people playing, with two people on each Warthog, and, like, yelling and shouting and trying to dodge the dropping platforms and stuff. Like, it was amazing.
Pshaw, I could see that.
That now would make Halo for 2, an interesting debate, that's a different that's for
story.
Sure.
Hey. Halo 2 was not that bad, okay?
People,
not until you got to the end.
Wesley, you and I are going to have to do fisticuffs, man.
Maybe.
Fisticuffs, because Halo 2 was different, but it was sure as hell better than Halo 3, man.
Sure. The word you're looking for there is worse.
If you do that, just make sure your webcams are on, because it'll be hilarious to watch the rage build over an hour
just
debate.
Just slapping at the lens for the freaking camera. Just nerd fight.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, where this ends up going, because, yeah, I mean, like it or, you know, everybody knows that one of these days retail as it comes to video, traditional retail as it comes to video games is going to be irrelevant. I think that's a long way off, but I don't think it's going to happen as soon as some people think, but it's going to happen one day, and it's going to be interesting to see, because that's the thing, is as long as people do keep. And I think that the core idea that Jim Sterling and, well, the Andy pre-order stance is big with both Jim Sterling and Total Biscuit. They just pretty much now say blanketly nobody should be doing it. And the reason they take that hard line of stance with it is their argument is that this stuff keeps happening and keeps getting worse because it's succeeding. I mean, they wouldn't do it, you know, businesses don't do what doesn't work, right? So
absolutely.
And that
I don't know. But I think that's giving too much credit to businesses. I mean,
well, and in the AAA game industry, you can frequently see a lot of businesses knuckle down on things that don't work, which is why there aren't as many of them anymore.
Yeah, but as I said, I mean, that's the thing, though. As I said, like, in the very beginning of this podcast, I mean, you're saying they don't do what doesn't work. I mean, then they'd already technically be doing what was already working. But as I mean, as we said, it seems like things like the season pass aren't working as intended. And even then, like, this is just the next step. Like, this is the next desperate step after trying to sell games new with exclusive content. And that was clearly not working. And part of it is, and I think part of the reason it's pre-order specifically, is again, like, just look at the Tomb Raider thing, where they wanted to sell that many units immediately. And maybe that's also part of Sega's thing, is right now, they don't have enough pre-orders that they feel confident in what the game sales will be. And granted, it is still short-sighted. It's still them looking at that day one sale kind of a thing instead of, all right, well, if we really have faith in this game, let's see how it does over the first month as opposed to just the first week. But that's unfortunately not how the games industry looks at things. So they're going to try and coax people into buying the game day one. But I think, again, that's... to me, it smells like desperation. It smells like a cornered animal. It doesn't sound or seem at all to me like business people looking down and be like, ha, look at those fools. They'll give us money for anything. We could pee on their hands like R. Kelly. It was R. Kelly, right?
I think it might have been.
Whichever one. Like, we could pee on them and they'll give us money. But I mean, that's the thing. Like,
to a certain degree, it's that, I think. But, I mean, I think it's also just that... I think because businesses love data and they love metrics and if this wasn't working at all, if nobody was stepping up and pre-ordering for this stuff, they probably would be like, okay, well, we better figure out something else at some point. Yeah, and I think the idea that Sterling and Total Biscuit are trying to push is they say. Just don't do it anymore so that they'll stop doing it. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but if they don't do that, they're going to move on to something else. And part of their argument, too, is that don't do this anymore so that we can further along push retail into irrelevance so that these guys go away and this stuff goes away. And I'm kind of like, the publishers still want to be able to project their sales, and whatever retailer you're buying from, whether it's GameStop or PSN or Xbox or Steam, wants as many sales up front as they can get. So I'm like, if GameStop goes away tomorrow, this is just going to move to another venue. I don't think it's going to go away. Because, I mean, you can Steam, so many people consider Steam the holy grail of everything, and you can still pre-order on there all you like.
And it's not even just that. It's like, I mean, I talk to people. I mean, granted, like, I mean, I think about my brother who wants a library, basically. And, you know, I told my sister and my mom that the worst idea for a gift for him would be a Nook or a Kindle, because to him, part of a book is having the book, like the smell of the pages, the turning it, like that physical thing that he's used to. And granted, in my mind, it's like, well, that's because you're used to it. Of course, that's what you think is the complete reading experience, because that's what you grew up with, and that's what you are now emotionally attached to. For a lot of people, you know, buying that game, removing the plastic wrap, opening it up, and smelling the new disc smell is part of the experience of having a game. And I'll admit, I even have some satisfaction in looking at a shelf with all of my games. Like, that's the one thing that, even though you can kind of modify what Steam's library looks like, I kind of wish there was a setting that made everything look like a physical box on a shelf. And when you clicked it, like, you could spin the box around or something. Like, I would love a future where I could have something like that. And even Kindle, I believe, has something that looks like a physical bookshelf, because they want to recreate something that's like, these are the things that I have, like a sense of ownership in a sense, a pride in your collection, which when you're looking at a list, well, it's just a spreadsheet. There's nothing to be proud of. If anything, it becomes daunting. It's subtle, but it's a difference. And I think when they say, you know, ditch the physical, move to the future, I mean, hey, I respect what you mean, because in a practical sense, it actually makes a lot of sense. It's better. I mean, in a practical sense, all of a sudden you have a lot more physical space. Like, I mean, I'm looking at, like, my desk is where I keep my 3DS games and some of my PlayStation 1 games. This is where my PS3 is. But then I have my PSP games that I got from Garion on Gamers with Jobs. They're in a box on the floor because I have nowhere else to put them. Because I just don't have the space to put them someplace where it makes sense, where I can show them off, because they're shaped weirdly. But that's the thing. Like, it's like digital is in some ways more convenient, but at the same time, I like being able to just look up and be like, those are my games.
Well, and you know what? I mean, I'm actually the same way. I mean, that's the funny thing is I still buy, even though, like, I have a PS4 where I can download everything, I still buy most of my retail games for that system, both from the wanting to be able to see what I've got perspective and also just from the ownership perspective. So, like, so that I can still, you know, if PSN goes away at some point, I can still chuck the disc in and play that, whereas I might not be able to do that with a downloaded title. But like, I still, buy most of at least console games retail when I can. But yeah, at the same time, like, I think it'll still be around for a little while, but I also look at that and go, yeah, that's going to go away at some point. But I think too many people and too many pundits are laying this entire situation at the feet of retail and acting as if, well, if we can just get GameStop out of the equation, all of this crap will go away. And I'm like, no, it really won't.
Yeah, as we discussed, I mean, people talk about preloading. I mean, granted, you could wait until, like, the last week to pay for a game ahead of time and therefore have it preload on your system. Yeah. But, and then, I mean, there's also, the only reason I don't pre-order off of Amazon is because Amazon waits until the game's release date. Right now, I don't make the amount of money that I can reliably have that cash in my account. And while, and that's the thing, I've talked with people that said, well, why don't you just take the cash out and set it aside? For me, being able to walk into the GameStop, handle my card, and say, put X amount onto this game and gradually pay it off over time is actually more convenient for me. And that's the thing. Like, people keep talking about it being consumer unfriendly. That depends on the objective of the consumer and what the consumer wants. And also the fact that, honestly, I kind of like the excuse of talking to those people at this particular GameStop because I like the employees there. I know that's, you know, unheard of, especially because a GameStop not 10 minutes away, my roommate and I walked in there, and it was right around E3 time, and the guy's, you know, asking a couple questions, and I'm basically trying to say, look, yeah, we know, we pay attention to the game news, we watch E3, we know what your deal is, leave us alone. And he keeps on coming at us with all of this different, you know, well, if you want to get extra trading credit, or if you want to get this or that, and it's like, dude, we're here to like, kill 10 minutes while Pizza Hut cooks some boneless wings for us, okay? Just leave us alone. We're not here to shop at all. We're not buying anything. We're looking. But, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I walked into the GameStop, and I was getting pressured by this guy, and it's like, dude, leave me alone. Whereas the other one that I go to, not really much pressure at all. And that's the funny thing, because it's subtle sometimes when you can tell they're getting orders from on high. Like, I do have the free version of their little power-ups card, so whenever I buy a game, I get, like, X number of points, not as many as if I did have a, the pro membership, which is, like, some number of money a year. If I had that, I'd be getting more points, but the general idea is you get points and you start to get stuff for free, or you get, like, rewards or something. And when I went into the store and I started putting some money down, oh, it was also when I was getting the Fable Anniversary, because I had some kind of spare cash, whatever, on me. And she, oh, I had a coupon for like X number of percentage off. And when I went to check out, she was like, oh, by the way, you got enough points on your card, you could get like a X number of dollars off this game. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. And then, you know, after I get it, or I was thinking about it, like, I heard her make the mention to another customer, and it was that I realized, oh, you know what, they've probably been told by corporate to check on people's points, see if they can use that, because it's going to get them more chances of profit than if you use your points to get something like a t-shirt off of the website or some other physical object that technically GameStop then has to pay for. So, yep. And that's the thing, like, I'd rather, like, I mean, yeah, I know now that it's like, oh, so it's still technically a scummy practice, but having worked at GameStop, it's like, okay, I understand they have to do it, because anyone could come in, like, even if they know I'm not a secret shopper, the next guy in line might be a secret shopper. Like, anybody going in might be a secret shopper and have to, you know, fill out a survey, or might even represent corporate, kind of a thing. So I understand why they would have to do that, but they at least don't harass me, is the thing. And I'm able to actually talk about video games with them when I go in there most of the time, and I honestly appreciate that. It's kind of like if you keep going to a restaurant where you tip them and everything, because you, well, of course you tip them, but like tip extra, because it's like, you know what, you're a waitress, you're paid to be nice, but hey, at least you're very sociable about it. Like, you make me believe that you're actually a friend, kind of a thing. It's like a minor thing, but to me it makes a difference. And to me, yeah, I don't think giving GameStop that, like, I feel like whatever the interest is, it's not getting them that much more profit off of a brand new game. And if it's going to the publisher and the studio, even if it's technically a bad practice for, like the whole Alien thing, for me, it's like, well, at least Creative Assembly might have a more slim chance at surviving another day. Granted, I don't think they're necessarily in danger, but, I mean, you get the point. Like, maybe, just maybe, my pre-order is going to help allow Sega think, okay, this niche, like, weird idea that normally doesn't work for AAA games, let's try another experiment like this. Like, maybe. You never know. I mean,
yeah,
it's doubtful. I mean, I'm the kind of person that thinks voting is ultimately pointless, but maybe it'll help. I mean,
those are the things that we never know about the seedy underbelly of the industry, right? Is whether or not things like that actually do help in some way. But you can say, like, you know, for example, Watch Dogs was, I remember, I think it was, it must have been Ubisoft themselves who said it, but Watch Dogs 2 was apparently, and you can say what you want about how the final game turned out, but the sequel to that was apparently greenlit based purely off of the pre-order numbers alone, because the pre-orders didn't make the game profitable, they never do, but they were able to use their, you know, fancy predictive algorithms to say, well, based on that, this game is going to sell this much, so we know it's going to make enough to justify another one. And maybe in the case of more niche horror titles like Alien Isolation, or even stuff like The Evil Within or something like that, if they pre-order very well, then that might convince the publisher to either greenlight another one, or maybe greenlight another horror title, because they'll be like, hey, maybe people are actually buying these again, or maybe greenlight some additional bigger DLC for the product to come down the road that maybe wouldn't have happened if they weren't able to know earlier on that it was going to sell well. And things like that. And maybe that does help in some way. But the problem is the industry is so secretive that they never tell us this kind of thing, so we would never know.
No, that's the thing. You would have to be a press member that has enough good relation to even get a sniff of any of it. And a lot of times they can't always report on it. And when they do, and that's the thing, like,
and if you talk about it, you're screwed.
or you end up being someone like Ben Cushera or Jim Sterling. That's the thing. I feel like Jim Sterling, like, no matter what his personality is on Twitter and stuff, actually tends to be much more reasonable when you watch his videos. But sometimes the way he comes off is very aggressive. And Ben Cushera,
I mean, that's his part, right? Like, that's the persona he's exuding.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you watch Jimquisition, like, you can usually tell his persona and then his actual argument. The thing is, if you read something like Twitter, it's always his persona. With, yeah, Ben Cushera, though, it's just raw, aggressive, I am right attitude, and here's why. Which is a very different thing. It is one of the reasons why I honestly kind of cringe when I see he's written a new article.
Yeah, I mean, I can do a whole episode on my problem with both him and people who operate like him in the games press, but that's a whole other tangent. Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, it might sound mean in some ways, but at the same time, it's like there's a reason there are some, and that's one of the reasons I actually can't list. I have trouble with the Quarter to Three Games podcast because I like Tom Chick as a writer better than I do as a podcast host. And part of it is just his his sense of humor. He's definitely got a sense of humor to him that is unique. And I like listening to his movie podcast better than his game podcast, basically. I think ultimately he comes off a lot better in his writing.
I think that's a case of you can even tie that back to what we were saying a little bit about trusting reviewers and stuff like that. Everybody out there who's writing about this stuff or podcasting about it or talking about it sort of has their own voice, and you have to sort of find the voices that resonate with you best, I think, to choose this is what I'm going to base my information on.
And in a lot of ways, I mean, here's how it's not that I technically don't trust reviewers. For some types of games, I will, as much as I hate the existence of it, check the Metacritic to get a general sense of what publications thought what, and there are some that I respect enough that I'll be like, okay, like Eurogamer. Like, it's like, oh, Eurogamer gave it an 85 out of 100. Okay, I'm good with that. Maybe I'll check the review. Certain publications, I'll be like that. Then there are other games where it's like, I'm sorry, I'm never going to trust the review for a more niche title or something that's going to be different, like Brutal Legend. Naturally, I feel very different than most of the reviews for that game. I feel very different about Wonderful 101 than most of the reviews for that game. I'm not going to trust many of the reviews for Hyrule Warriors or Alien Isolation because I don't necessarily trust what they're going to be judging it on. Silent Hill Shattered Memories or anything. Like, these are some niche games that are trying to do different things that I want to go in with my own eyes and make up my own mind because I don't necessarily trust what anyone else has to say about them. Versus, hey, maybe the latest Call of Duty will review well, or maybe Destiny, maybe that'll review. Like it feels like if it's more a generic AAA style of game that doesn't take too many risks, then I'll be able to trust the review a little bit better. At the same time, like, I mean, you start to learn like what the industry thinks is views as its favorite things. I like Dragon's Dogma a hell of a lot better than I like either Dragon Age or any Elder Scrolls game or any Bethesda game for that matter. But I don't expect the rest of the gaming press to have any, you know, agreement with me about that. So it's a matter of knowing where to pick your battle. It's not necessarily like, oh, I don't trust game reviewers. Like, I don't believe they're bought out or anything like that. I don't feel like they're operating on the same critical plane that I'm trying to operate on, which sounds incredibly arrogant to say.
Just a little.
But it's not intended to say, like, oh, I'm just better than they are. Like, it's not that. It's what I'm trying to look at is different. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think there's a way I can. I think that's basically like, you know what, I already started digging a hole, I'd rather stop at 2 feet than get all the way down to 10.
So. Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own personal thing. Like, I'm going to buy a Total War game when it comes out. I don't care what the reviewers say, because that's my game. You know, like, everybody has their things that where their interests don't align with other people's. And sometimes it's hard to find people who would, you know, write a review that has your viewpoint of a game because you love Total War or whatever it is. There's all kinds of games out there, and you know, everybody has those things.
Basically, what you got to look at is something along the lines of Three Moves Ahead, where it's all strategy games.
Yep. Yeah. Like, everybody finds their little niche.
All right. I think we generally had a decent enough discussion. I mean, it's not like we actually came to a conclusion about anything, but I think.
I don't think there's a real hard solution to it any way you slice it is the main thing. I think it's just it's something that is probably going to be around for a while. I think it's just, yeah, if consumers have to decide for themselves how much of it they're willing to put up with. But, I think it's the
Miley Cyrus of video games. As long as people keep buying records, she'll keep making music. Yep. As long as they keep pre-ordering, they'll keep putting bonuses in there.
Yep.
You know what? Hopefully they've been doing that for years. Okay, they've been doing that for years. Because I got Legend of Mana with a soundtrack, and I remember like we had keychains and stuff when I was working at GameStop. It's just now, and I think that's part of it too. Is now because you can do it digitally, it's like, oh, instead of having to actually make a piece of merchandise like T-shirts and stuff. Oh yeah, we used to get a bunch of T-shirts when I was working at GameStop. Yep. I think I had a Metroid Prime polo for a while there.
That'd be nice, actually.
But, well, it don't fit me now. that thing's lost. But that's the thing. Like, you end up having... You always had this stuff, but now digital, it's like, it costs less. And again, like, the DLC was an attempt to keep the disc in people's game systems a little bit longer. I mean, it all seems more like desperation to me, because at the same time, when the games industry was just doing those T-shirts and things, it wasn't as effective. We still were pressured to get pre-orders all the time. We were more pressured to get magazine subscriptions. But even then, like all the things we were pressured to do. And that's the funny thing. Like, I was always a lot better at getting people to reserve games. That's the funny thing. But even then, like, it wasn't considered that important. It was important, but it wasn't as important as it seems to be now. And I think that's because the whole overbloating of budgets thing, selling a crap ton of copies is more important than ever. So everyone makes it sound like it's just greed. But I think that's really an oversimplification. I think it's also a combination, however, of the fact that, I mean, when you think about how modern businesses are run, it's not okay to be able to remain in business. It's not okay to just stay in the black. You have to always be making a profit. You got to always be going up. And I think that's the real problem, which is the games industry should be about, you know, can we break even? Can we stay in the black? Can we remain safe? Or do we always have to make a profit? And I think the problem...
And ever-increasing profits is the biggest, thing.
And that's the thing, like, you know, just basic logic 101, you're never, like, no matter what your business is, at some point you get too big to sustain that. Like, you will never be able to make increasing profit. At some point, you plateau. And
the problem is that the executives running these big businesses hope that they can retire with very large bonuses and have that be the next guy's problem.
Oh, well, it's a whole bunch of stuff, because it's also people that went to business school and that's all they learned is how to make more profit. I mean, it's all based off of theory and all kinds of other crap. It's not actual, like, running a business, getting to know customers. I mean, none of that. And now these people are, like, you know, they've been working in there for years and they get promoted and that's all they see. It's they're not seeing customers. They're not seeing people. They're looking at strategies and theories and, you know, well, how can we make sure we keep making a profit? And that's why, you know, all these other franchises at Activision died and they just doubled down on Call of Duty. And I kind of am wondering what's going through Bungie's head working with Activision, but maybe because of Halo, they've got enough clout that Activision's willing to stay back.
Yeah, I think Bungie's special. Yeah, Bungie's special. They have the means to control their fate more than most people, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Did you have any last words, Wesley?
I still pre-ordered Destiny and a PS4, so I can't really say anything.
No one got it on PS3. I want a PS3 beta code.
That white PS4, though, man. That white PS4.
I got multiple PS4 beta codes, but I think they only work on, I can check, but I think they only work on PS4.
Yeah, and that's the big reason. Like, I actually thought about putting, like, $5 down on Destiny and then pushing it towards Hyrule Warriors or something later on, just so I could get into the beta. But then I thought about it. It's like, no one I know is going to play it for PS3. What's the point of me getting into the beta if I'm playing all by myself? So,
yeah.
And screw playing with pubbies. So... I'm skipping out on Destiny until I can play it on a system where I have friends. By time I have a system where I have friends for Destiny, everyone else is going to be on to the next big thing, I imagine, so I'm basically probably not playing Destiny ever. Which is a real big shame, because I actually do really want to play it. But I'm going to play Hyrule Warriors instead. I think.
Oh, there you go.
I think, once I try and get everything worked out. And that's the thing, like, I have no problem pre-ordering these games because I'm able to just shift the cash over in a convenient way because, honestly, it's more convenient to just give it to GameStop than it is for me to have it sitting around my house. I mean, especially because hitting the ATM is not always convenient for me. So, yeah, and that's, I think, part of the point that I wanted to get to in the end anyway was, what is consumer friendly also partially depends on the consumer. And I know they're trying to think of the greater good, but I don't know. Maybe I'm quote unquote optimistic in my pessimism for how, like, I'm just pessimistic that this is the move of an exploitative group versus a desperate group to, like, searching to exploit because things aren't working out so well.
Yeah. Could be, yeah.
Alrighty then. I guess that wraps it up for us, unless you guys had one more thing to say.
I think I covered everything from my end.
Yep.
Alright. And as is usually the case, Wesley, your opinion doesn't matter anyway, especially after hearing about Halo 3, so...
Oh, man.
Your opinion is invalid!
Oh, man.
That's going to be one of the next topics. This is just going to be you and me, Halo 2 versus Halo 3.
Oh, I'd listen to that. That'll be an easy episode.
You think so. You think so. Halo is the number one series I've overthought its design for. So, all right. All right, then. I guess, Jerry, let people know what you've been working on and where they can find you.
Yeah, well, I'm, all my content as usual can be found on geekbravado.com. I haven't written too many blog posts lately, but I wrote a couple recently. I did, 2 reviews actually, which I don't usually do, unless I can do something a little different than the norm. I did a review of, Murdered Soul Suspect, which is a game that's actually not that good, but that I still really like for weird reasons, which I talked about on there. I also did a review of Video Games the Movie, which came out this past week, which I actually kickstarted and sadly was pretty disappointed in. So that's up on there as well. And, my YouTube channel, I put some stuff up there recently. I got another job a month ago, thank God. But it's been kind of messing with my schedule a bit. But I actually just bought a new laptop that's going to allow me to do editing on my lunch breaks. So I'm hoping to get more stuff up soon and possibly a little more stuff that's a little more advanced, a little more edited and stuff. So that's what I'm hoping to do over the next little while.
All right, and Wesley, you got a new podcast.
I do, and it has nothing to do with video games.
Yay!
Pshaw, then.
I started a podcast detailing the history of World War I, since this is the centenary anniversary of the start of World War I, and it's at historyofthegreatwar.com. I'm now on episode 4, and the war's about to start, so the party is getting going.
Sweet. I haven't listened to that yet, but I want to check it out because it sounds pretty cool. I don't know nearly enough about World War I.
It's been really interesting doing the research and stuff over the last couple months. I've had to dig in.
Have you checked out Valiant Hearts yet?
No, I have not. It is on my wish list. I'd like to do some sort of review or something for that on the site. I'm still trying to figure out how I want to work that in, but I really want to play it.
All right, and as for me... As usual, you can find content here at www.gamertag.net. You can also follow all things that I do at facebook.com/ramblepack64. I always update with new articles I've written on my blog on gamerswithjobs.com, where I also write new episodes of the Ramblecast, which you can subscribe to on iTunes, or if you go to gamertag.net, you'll find the RSS feed and everything. I mean, granted, you've got to be listening somehow. I mean... one of those ways.
You're hearing this in the background somewhere.
Yeah. If you happen to be like on the train and you notice someone is listening to this and I don't know, too far. But yeah, I mean, and if on iTunes, you know, rate us, review us on iTunes so we can have more than just like 5 listeners. Follow me on patreon.com/ramblepack64. And I am actually coming out with a new Ramble Pack 64 video. I'm working on it right now. It's coming along at a decent enough pace. I don't want to make any predictions, but I think I could be able to have it up before the end of next week. I'm not making any promises, though. So look out for that. It's going to be on Telltale's The Walking Dead. It's not a traditional game review, though. It is actually analyzing its story and its theme of parenting. So it's going to be in-depth, and it's naturally going to have a lot of spoilers, but I'm pretty proud of it. That sounds cool.
It sounds cool.
So, you know, and of course, last week was 1994 week on Gamers with Jobs, or actually at this point, a little over last week. I had two articles go up, Basements and Brothers Princess Kings. One of them is the first time I was ever scared of a video game when I was in fourth grade playing Doom and Super Metroid. And then the other one is a narrative piece, or prose piece, if you will, kind of a short story that I looked into the relationship of Edgar and Sabin in Final Fantasy VI. I don't do those pieces very often. I do like to break away from games criticism once in a while and write creatively. It was a very nice break. It doesn't seem like a lot of people have commented on it, which means I guess a lot of people just skimmed it or didn't read it, but either way, check one of those two out. Or this past week, I also wrote a piece on Star Fox and looking back on that. So just gamerswithjobs.com, analysis paralysis is the name of the column. You'll probably see it up top. Just check any of that stuff out, and, you know, read other people's stuff too. Like, it's Gamers with Jobs. We got Russ Pitts back from Polygon and Escapist, you know? So check all that out. And I think I've blabbered enough about where you can find me. And of course, you know, comments, whatever, on facebook.com/ramblepack64. Just let people know I exist. So, and of course, let us know if you like this episode. I'm not necessarily sure what episodes people tend to like. I have a feeling this one will actually do well. But if you didn't like it, then give me the middle finger on Facebook. Otherwise, you know,
they have a button for that now.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, say nothing. So your silence will be taken as, you know, approval. So, all right, everyone have a good night, and thank you for listening.
Take care, all.